Good afternoon, everyone. I am Kathy Hubbard, a co-founder of Policy Circle. This is the third in our series of conversation calls designed as a unique engagement opportunity for Policy Circle leaders, members, and supporters to listen to and ask questions of policy experts and authors of our Policy Circle briefs. The topic of this call is education savings accounts. Education is a subject incredibly important to me and to many of the Policy Circle women around the country. At our September Policy Summit, we featured a panel entitled Why Creating Career Pathways Matters. One of our panelists, Mark Feinauer, the Executive Director of Support Services at Bank of America, shared how his division of 300 employees with intellectual disabilities had served as an in-house marketing and fulfillment operation. We mention this because it raises the issue of how best to educate children with a variety of intellectual and physical challenges so that they are well prepared for the workplace. ESAs can play a big role by offering an alternative education option from what is offered at local public schools. So we have three panelists with us today. Bill Turgeon, a member of the Loudoun County, Virginia School Board, John Kirtley, the Vice Chair of the American Federation for Children, and Katie Swingle, a parent of four kids in Florida, one of whom has special needs and uses an ESA. First up is our guest policy editor, Jill Turgeon. Jill, thank you so much for taking your time to assemble the brief. And would you begin by sharing with us a little bit about your experience in education?
Sure thing. I'm very happy to be here. I have about close to 20 years of cumulative experience in education. I had 10 years as an educator in the classroom, and I spent the past 7 years as a school board member. I've chaired the Curriculum Instruction Committee, so I've been very involved in a lot of the instructional aspects of the school board. I've been an advocate for educational choice for many years. I've worked with a variety of advocacy groups and so forth. And through that work, I was asked by my state delegate, who's the equivalent of a House of Representatives here in Virginia, who was introducing an ESA bill a few years ago. And he consulted with me on a lot of the aspects and the impact on the school districts and so forth. So I started becoming more interested in the ESAs at that point. Been active in a lot of discussions on education savings accounts for the last few years, interacted with people from the Heritage Foundation, EdChoice, American Enterprise Institute, the Virginia Coalition for Educational Choice, and I've really found these ESAs to be an instrumental tool in helping parents provide educational resources for their child, and I've also found there to be a lot of misinformation on ESAs, and so that's really why I wanted to have this brief shared with the people from the Policy Circle. My hope is for us to be able to have a wonderful conversation here and for the women here to be outfitted with information and tools that they can use to launch this conversation within their communities. I think there's a lot of good that can be done.
Thank you so much, Jill. I'd now like to introduce John Kirtley.
Good afternoon. My name is John Kirtley, and for about 20 years, I have been an advocate for empowering low-income and special needs, the families of low-income and special needs children, to be able to choose the best educational environment that is best suited for their needs. And that has taken on many roles for me. I am, as Kathy said, currently Vice Chairman of the American Federation for Children. That is an advocacy group that tries to first elect state legislators and statewide office holders that favor parental empowerment in education, and then we try to pass laws that do, in fact, empower parents to choose, and then we try to implement those laws. I'm also chairman of the nonprofit in Florida that administers two main programs. First is a tax credit scholarship for low-income children. There are now about 100,000 low-income kids attending a school of their choice, primarily private and faith-based schools under that program. But we also administer what's called the Gardner Scholarship Program, which is an ESA, and it helps certain categories of special needs children. And we now have about 10,000 kids on that program in Florida, and it's a program where the state puts each year roughly $10,000 into an account and then the parent can use that money for certain approved purposes, all educational, of course, whether that be private school tuition, certainly, but also certain approved therapies, home educational materials, other things that the parent believes will help provide the best customized education for their child. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much, John. Now I'd like to introduce Katie Swingle, our parent.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to tell our story and have other people learn about education savings accounts. I have four little boys, ages 10, 8, 5, and 2. My oldest son, Gregory, is on the autism spectrum. And just to say how I got involved in this, we planned to have him go to public school and create an amazing IEP, what we thought was going to be an amazing IEP for him to attend public school. However, once we started in kindergarten, we realized there was no place for him in public school. He was too high-functioning for a self-contained classroom. He was too low-functioning to be mainstream. And even though the school district was amazing and tried everything they possibly could in a variety of environments, I finally had to pull my child out and homeschool him. And I was pretty despondent. I didn't know what to do. Then we came across this small private school who tested him and said, "We can help you." And we were ecstatic. However, the bill was going to be about $20,000. My husband is an attorney. I'm a stay-at-home mom. We don't have a ton of money, but I was desperate at the time. So we went ahead and pulled money out of our IRA at a penalty to get him into this school. And once he got into this school, it was an absolutely amazing transformation. My child, who had been told he would never speak, was learning to read. He was learning to write. The transformation was absolutely amazing, and there was no way I was going to take him out of this school, but I didn't know how I was going to pay for it. And that's when I learned about Florida's Gardner Scholarship, which is our ESA. So I am now able to take my scholarship funds that I received for Gregory. We pay private school tuition. I also have him in therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy for his anxiety. He has a lot of anxiety issues. It also pays for a social skills group that he's crazy about. So I have had firsthand experience with how not only transforming ESAs are for the kids, but how transforming they are for the family. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Katie. That's a great story to hear. We appreciate your sharing that with us. So thank you all again for being here. I also have, all of you, a real strong interest in education reform and became involved in the mid-1990s when the first private school choice program was started in Indiana. I live in Indianapolis, and a gentleman here named Pat Rooney started this program called the Choice Charitable Trust to give kids an opportunity to go to private schools. And we became big supporters for one reason, and that is we believe that too many children are trapped in failing schools and are really stuck there because of where they live or their lack of resources. And when you're stuck in a mediocre or unsafe school as a parent, you get very frustrated. And we believe that everybody should have an opportunity to obtain a quality education and that parents should have a wide range of educational options. So that includes traditional public schools and charter schools and private schools, home schools, and they should have the means through these ESAs or scholarships to be able to choose what option best fits their child. So today with the ESAs, as you've all read from your brief and as you learned here, parents can use these education dollars to pay for their tuition fees, textbooks, tutoring, extra therapy. So it really does give more opportunities to parents, and I'm just very hopeful that as this continues to be better known around the country, that more states will adopt ESAs and scholarship programs and be able to really offer more options to parents. So let's begin with a few questions to our panelists here. John, I'll start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about how ESAs have worked in Florida?
Well, the program is 3 years old, and I will tell you that the response from the families has been absolutely phenomenal. I just can't tell you how many stories I have heard anecdotally of parents really just crying tears of joy that they now have the means to, as I said, customize their children's educations to the degree that they need it to be customized. And I'm sure that Katie could tell us more about, you know, how her personal experience has reflected that. So there's just been tremendous positive response from the families. I would say it's been challenging from an implementation point of view. And what I mean by that is when this program was originally passed 3 years ago, the way it worked was parents had to first spend the money out of pocket and then submit their receipts to our nonprofit, and then we would approve them and reimburse them. That's a horribly inefficient system, first for the parents, because, you know, if you're moderate or lower income, you may not have the money in your pocket to upfront those costs. And so that was a very restrictive provision. And then for us, our nonprofit, it was incredibly labor intensive. We were reviewing over 100,000 receipts per year. So what we decided to do was something very exciting. And as we actually raised about $4 million privately, and we developed an online platform called My Scholar Shop. And what this is, it's a online platform, just kind of like Amazon, where parents can go online, their money is deposited into an account that they can see on the screen. And then the providers of goods and services, whether it be a school, we work with Best Buy for educational materials, or the approved therapists, they'll all be on this platform, and the parents can actually allocate, move the money to these providers and never come out of pocket. Obviously, it's much more efficient for us as a nonprofit. And then one more benefit of this is it virtually eliminates the possibility of fraud, because in the past, you might have a parent, say, buy 4 or 5 laptops and maybe sell 3. That obviously didn't happen very often, but it could happen. On this online platform, that cannot happen. If a parent tries to buy 4 or 5 laptops, the system won't allow that to happen. They'll have to come to us and talk to us about the exception. So we're very excited about sharing this platform with other states as they hopefully pass more ESAs, because the implementation of these it has to be done properly in order for them to be accepted.
Well, that's terrific that you all have been able to create that online platform, and it sounds like it'd be a wonderful thing to replicate in other states. So, but right now you're the only one that has it in Florida. Is that correct, John?
That's correct. We're trying to make sure that it's obviously a beta site. It's brand new. We're trying to make sure it's working perfectly before it's exported to other states. But pretty soon we're going to be ready to do that.
That's great. All right, Jill, how have you seen ESAs work, and what's your perception about school boards and schools being open to introducing this type of mechanism? Do they feel threatened? What kind of concerns have you seen?
Threatened is a good word. I'll touch on that in a minute. But first of all, as far as like interactions or how I've seen them work, unfortunately, because Virginia, although the bill was introduced 3 times, one time it just passed the House, and the last 2 times it passed both the House and Senate and vetoed by our governor, I haven't been able to see them in action here in Virginia. But through my interactions with people such as Katie and those from different organizations, I've seen some amazing stories of the benefits of ESAs. I've also seen, however, maybe from a different perspective, how educational choice works and how that benefits the child.
whether it's through ESA or charter schools or what have you, specifically in the area of special needs child, because as you all read in the brief, that quite often these ESAs are provided primarily for students with special needs. And as we all know, special needs students take a lot more funding to educate in our public schools. And by just utilizing the state funds, you know, it's really a cost benefit to the school boards. And that's one of the things I've been trying to share with my colleagues on the board and others in the area. And let me just touch on, I guess, what the school board's kind of their perspective is on these ESAs. I think really the issue or their concerns are really twofold. And first is what we talked about just a minute ago, and that's that fear of losing control. And I think we see that across the board in educational institutions. Whenever you talk of private schools or vouchers or ESAs or what have you, there's this fear, it's this knee-jerk reaction that someone is trying to destroy public education, and that's absolutely not the case. So I think that's an issue, and that's really a philosophical issue, and whether we can address that or not, I don't know. But the second one I think can be addressed, and that is more of that practical fear, and that really goes to the financial aspect, like I touched on just a minute ago. If we really were educating our school boards so that they understand, and the school boards are the ones that, you know, do the budget every year, so we're always thinking about finances. If they really understood the financial benefit that could be realized by implementing these ESAs for the school system, I think they'd be much more apt to at least listen to maybe the possibility of introducing them at their state level. I think that's really one of the main reasons I've become so involved with this, is because there is such a misunderstanding of that. We need to engage our school boards so that they can go and then advocate to the state legislators. You know, again, a special education student costs, well, it varies, but, you know, 3, 4, 5 times as much to educate as it does a general education student. If you're just taking the state funds and applying that to these ESAs, that's, you know, at best 45-50% of the funding for that child is coming from state funds, and that's for, you know, an average cost per pupil. So if you have the average cost per pupil is $12,000, $6,000 that's coming from the state, that's going to that child for the ESA. Well, if that's a special education child, it doesn't cost $12,000 to educate that child. It costs probably $25,000 or $30,000. So it's really actually leaving more money in the localities. I know that's a lot of information, but it's really, if you delve into the brief, you can see it outlined a little bit better. But that's really, you know, some of the main concerns. And actually, the third one, I think, is assessment. And I know we've had some questions on that as well. You know, there are ways that we can assess the students, and we can touch on that later. But I think assessment's another concern that people have.
Well, you're right. A big part of this issue is just education and helping people understand what they really are about. So, Katie, you've been an end user of ESAs.
Yes.
Can you please share with us a little bit about your experience?
Yes, yes. Like I said, so I was in the pilot program that first year, and that first year we were able to pay Gregory's tuition, and we had these amazing transformation for him educationally, socially, and again, for our entire family. My husband and I had spent years thinking about how he was going to have to live with us forever. He would never be independent. We didn't have the money for all of the therapies that he needed. And we had an answer to our prayers with this ESA. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what Mr. Kirtley was talking about with my scholarship, because it has been absolutely amazing. I can go online, I log in, I put Gregory's therapy into a basket, just like you would on Amazon. I kind of call this the Amazon of autism because, and I'm just one special needs. There's 12 different special needs that fall under the Gardner Scholarship. My son happens to have autism, but it could be cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, and so forth. I can put an hour of therapy into the basket. It goes to checkout, and it pays my therapist. She's a direct provider. She prefers it that way. I don't have to put up any of my upfront money. Before, I would have to pay, like he said, and then I get wait to get reimbursed. And what was happening with some families is they were putting it on their credit cards. They were doing all kinds of things. This is so amazingly easy, and but yet so high tech, and it's just, it's really a miracle. My son is now in the fifth grade. He is going to a Catholic school, so what he receives from the Catholic school is a smaller environment. I have more access to the teachers. The school classroom is a little bit smaller. He's on the principal's honor roll, which means he has a 95% or above in all subjects. He is assessed via state assessment, and my tuition is paid through Gardner. And I have a child I never thought I would have, and it always tears me up a little bit when I am talking to a group of people about this, because special needs families don't have a lot of hope, and when you go through the public school system, while it works for some, it doesn't work for all. It's like trying to stick a circle into a square box. It's not going to happen, and you jam it, and you jam it, and eventually you just get frustrated and scared, and you don't know what to do, and the Gardner Scholarship or this ESA has solved, I know, many, many, if not most of our problems. Gregory still has some social issues we work with, which is why he's in therapy. But that's the thing. They're seeing that my son's education isn't just in the classroom. My son, because of his autism, his education needs to be in the therapist's office. It needs to be in a speech therapist's office. It needs to be in a classroom. And they're taking care of that and making sure that he's going to have a well-rounded experience. And at the same time, they're also preparing him for a future. I have thoughts of him, you know, having a job, a career, absolutely no reason with his grades that he won't be able to go to college with maybe a little bit of assistance in social departments. I never thought that would happen when he was first diagnosed. As far as I was concerned, we were doomed. So I always just, I like to share that it really does change families' lives.
That's a wonderful story, Katie, and how fabulous to see your son thrive at this school and do so.
He really is. And like I said, it's easy to use as a parent. I just log on. My Scholar Shop is a great SAP, a company that created it, really did a fantastic job with making it easy for users like me. I had I've done some speaking about these things, and I got an email from a woman in Kissimmee, and she wrote to me and she said, "We live in Kissimmee, and I am not a very good reader, and I'm really scared about submitting my son's reimbursements because I don't really know how to read." And this was before my Scholar Shop came out, and you could tell by her writing that that was definitely an issue. So I met with her at Starbucks, and for the first time, both of us used my Scholar Shop, and she was able to put in all of her son's therapies and get reimbursed. She's a waitress at Disney. She got to get all of her reimbursements at once. I mean, this is helping not only, like I said, my husband's an attorney. We're both well-educated. This woman is a waitress who's barely literate, and it's helping all of us. It's changing all of our lives. Our kids are going to schools they need in an environment they right. need to be in, or they're staying home where the parent can stay home and work with them with a private curriculum and private therapist. There's so many options. Wow. And
well, that's what you just said about changing lives is what this program is doing. And we just have a few minutes left. We want to just offer some time to any of our participants here to ask any questions of you panelists. So if you have a question, please dial 5-star on your phone, and it will add you to the queue. Lorna is going to start fielding them, and we will direct them to the right person if the questioner has not directed them already. So no questions. So, Lorna, do we have some questions?
Yes, so we do have a question from Lisa. Lisa, I've just unmuted your line. Please feel free to start talking.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. I live in Illinois. We do not have ESAs, but we do have the tax credit scholarship that John talked about in the very beginning, and that does offer funds to low-income families. This program is opposed by J.B. Pritzker for our upcoming gubernatorial election. if my circle wanted to get behind this issue or learn more about this issue, where can we get more information?
Well, I would direct you to, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go, John.
No, no, please, you, Kathy, please.
No, no, you go ahead and answer, and then I'll add on.
Okay. I would direct you to a group called Empower Illinois. And if you go on, if you Google them, they'll come right up. They are the group in your state that advocated and helped pass the tax credit scholarship last year, which was an amazing achievement. And so they have all the information about the program, but also they will help you to help them advocate. So, again, Empower Illinois is the name of the group.
And that was the same answer I was going to give in case John didn't give that answer. So that was it. In addition, just for your own background, too, another organization that you've heard about already because John's advised here, the American Federation for Children. And just for further background, because this is the kind of work that we support, I also serve on their board, so we're all in this together. Okay, other questions?
Yes. So we have Krista. Krista, I have just unmuted your line. Whenever you are ready, please go ahead and talk.
All right, thank you. I'm also in Illinois and send my kids to public schools along with most people around me. How have you guys been able to explain the benefits of ESAs when people may not be familiar with the concept of school choice?
I'm sorry, how we've been able to do what?
How are you able to explain the benefits of an ESA to people who are in the public school system who may not be familiar with the idea of school choice?
Sure. Kathy, you want me to try to handle that one?
You go ahead, and then the rest of you jump in and add on.
I will tell you that it's much easier to convince a teacher who's in the classroom that an ESA for a special needs child is the right, is a good thing, than it is an official of the teacher's union. The teacher who's in the classroom, perhaps who's dealt with a special needs child or even works with them on a regular basis, is very quick to understand how unique each child is and how a customized learning experience might be what's best for the child, and is less concerned about making sure the funds stay within a certain system. The people who are perhaps not in the classroom, whether it be an administrator at the school board level or the district level, or as I said, a teacher union official, they're going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard to convince them because they're more concerned about keeping the money within the system.
Thank you, John. Any of you else, others wish to add? This may be our last question.
I'll step in real quick, Kathy. I think that, and I completely agree, John, that when you're looking at administrators, you're going to have a lot harder of a sell in that respect. But again, I'll go back to when you're looking at the financial impact and the fiscal impact, I think if they understand the details behind that, I think you may be able to get some buy-in from some of the those that are looking at the purse strings of the system. Again, going back to the philosophical, which you may be held by the union leaders, you may not be able to make a lot of headway. Except, I will say, having worked with the many individuals in the D.C. area, where typically the D.C. area, the unions and so forth are very strong. They're not very pro-educational choice. They do have a lot of charter schools. And I do think if you can appeal to their sense of advocacy for a particular group, and in this case with ESAs, it's primarily our special education population, if you can really find out what their specific concerns are, I think a lot of times you can really appeal to their sense of advocacy and show that this is really a way to empower these parents to make choices for their children. I know in some of my discussions, we've started a couple of charter schools here in Loudoun, and we had some opposition from our union leaders. And once I sat down and really talked with them about the benefits and how it really advocates for the underdog and so forth, you had some buy-in. So I think really the first step is really to sit down and have that conversation to see what they're opposed to and what their fear is. Because I think oftentimes it's very broad misconception. And if we can, like, hone in on a couple of those points that they're really near and dear to them, we might be able to find a way to pull them to our side, so to speak.
Okay. Thank you so much, all of you. Lorna, do we have time for one more question, or do we need to wrap it up?
We actually have one question left.
Okay.
Molly, I have gone ahead and unmuted your line whenever you are ready.
Hi, first of all, thank you to everyone for being on the line. I think this call is probably geared more towards Jill or Katie. Katie, I'm also a mother of three boys, and my oldest as well had severe learning disabilities and received services here in the state for reading and writing assistance. And I saw firsthand when they started measuring and incenting special ed teachers based on student performance, that my son's performance and progress started to slow because the reading program that he needed to succeed was no longer part of the state program. And so to Jill's point, talking about assessments, how do we, first of all, ensure that these students are learning in the way that is best for them and that they are succeeding and growing like Gregory? And is that the standardized test that's the right answer? Do we even need to have assessments for kids in ESAs? Just what are your thoughts? One is a mother, Katie, watching Gregory grow, and Jill, kind of your experience in Virginia. What have you all have seen in terms of measurement of these programs and how it helps or hurts these programs?
Well, I'll go ahead. To Gregory. For Gregory, he's able to take a standardized test with some accommodations. So he's alone in the room. The teacher gives him oral instruction. So as far as Gregory's assessment goes, that's how that works. But I know that homeschooling parents have to turn in assessments too. Maybe Jill would be able to give more information on that. I think
sure.
It's important, though.
Yeah. No, and I agree. Assessment is absolutely important. And actually, in Virginia, we've had a little bit of change in how we assess all of our students. I actually worked on a bill a few years ago that reduced some of our standardized testing at the state level and allowing the localities to take a little bit more responsibility for that. It gives a much deeper knowledge base for the students and so forth. But as far as the assessments, you know, I think we knee-jerk defer to state assessments as being the assessment tool. We are, as educators, are assessing students all of the time, and I think really the push now, at least in Virginia, is to have the localities start doing these. It might be the MAP, the measure of academic progress testing, a lot of the formative testing and so forth assessments, and looking to the localities to be responsible for that. Like Katie said, the homeschoolers, they have assessments that they have to do. There's nationwide tests that are being given for our homeschool students, which, you know, you can use to assess for academic progress and so forth. I think there's a lot of assessment that's already being done. I just think, again, people at the very top are just looking at that standardized state-level test, and that's really, when you're looking at the research, is really not the way to really tell if a student is actually progressing. And I think looking to the localities is really the key.
Well, thank you, Jill, John, Katie, and everyone on the call. Thank you so much for taking your time. As you know, the ESA brief is available on our website, and we offer the brief offers, you know, more background information and outlines next steps if you want to take action. And feel free to share this link with other women you may know who are interested in this topic or even in starting a policy circle. And you can also share the link with your congressman or congresswoman and ask to have a conversation with them about the topic. If some of you may be in the middle of your fall meetings, we'd love for you to post a recap of your circle page to capture what perspectives were discussed. Please look in your inboxes later today for a quick survey about the call, as well as for a new housing brief and a conversation call on that topic. And thank you so much for being a part of this call and having an interest in education savings accounts, because I think in the end what we all want is a better option for our kids. Thank you, everybody.